Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including massively multiplayer checkbox simulators. I am Daniel Winter.
And I didn't forget, I am Mark Uwasa. I'm playing the role of Mark Uwasa today, this week.
Yes, no, sorry, I was just deep in thought on the philosophy of what constitutes a game.
There you go. Constant question.
Well, so for those not in the know, this is the playlist episode. Normally, this would be a featured game we'd be getting to on the schedule now, but we're having to shake things up a little bit. As mentioned before, it's the summer slump is here. We're outside having fun, getting sick sometimes, making it tough to schedule on games on the actual table right now. So we're making the most of that to bring you some other miscellaneous things we've been playing lately. The good news is we have some exciting guests lined up for the next few episodes, so stay tuned to that. But there'll be at least one more playlist, I believe, between this and our next featured game, which is A Feast for Odin.
There you go. As long as we keep playing games, we still have material.
Yes, yeah, and it's the Steam summer sale on right now, so plenty more games being added to the pile.
Very nice. All right, speaking of which, shall we talk a little bit about what's been happening?
Yeah, not a lot of news in the last week, but what's news to you, Mark?
Well, I thought I didn't have a lot of news, and then I just checked online. It was actually something I was waiting for. So I've been getting into miniatures painting. There is a creator that I had my eye on. They're called Titan Forge, but they have a line called Cyberforge, which is their sci-fi side of minis. And essentially what this is it's a 3D model creator, and they have Patreon. And every month they come out with new stuff. And wouldn't you know it, I was already keeping an eye on them because they put out great looking models. So these are STL files, essentially entirely digital, no physical products here, but you can print them, 3D print them yourself. And I've had some success with them in the past. So I was already going to check them out. But wouldn't you know it, they have something exciting that you might also be interested in for July, which it is July 1st today. Yeah, happy Indigenous Peoples Day, yeah, First Nations true. Day. We, as of July, they have released their new set, which includes a 5 parsecs from home, officially licensed set of mini
fig. That's official.
Miniatures.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they partnered up with Modifius Entertainment. It's legit. They have a range of characters, of sort of ragtag aliens and robots and creatures, and it looks pretty slick. So I think I'm going to pick that up and get my pal with a 3D printer to print it up, and then maybe I will bring those to the table when I play 5 parsecs from home.
Excellent. Well, speaking of 5 parsecs from home, I've mentioned before that I've been trying to hunt down a copy. Suddenly recalled that Rain City Games, a friendly local gaming store, is able to custom order in various things. I spoke to them a couple of days ago, and it should be here sometime this week. So always remember to check with your FLGS if they can get in some custom orders. I'm looking forward to checking that out. Maybe we can discuss it in the future.
Right, and bonus special good news is if anything from Modifius, anything published by Modifius, if you buy the physical copy of the book, they are part of the Bits and Mortar program.
Yes.
So you can get yourself a free digital copy of the PDF of the book you might have bought, unlike some other publishers, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, who charge you extra for the PDF, even if you bought the physical book. So kudos to Modifius. Kudos to Rain City Games, who supports Bits and Mortar. Love to see it.
Well, speaking of which, I just picked up a copy of Scum and Villainy somewhere behind me there that we've discussed a couple of times on the podcast, and it also is part of that. I think it's Evil Hat, I think, is the publisher. They are also a member of the Bits and Mortar. I got a PDF within 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it.
Excellent.
Great. How about yourself? Any good news beyond that?
Nothing super exciting. Just a couple of little notes here. As hinted in the intro, that has had me philosophizing on games. There is a new game in town called 1 Million Checkboxes, which can be found at 1millioncheckboxes.com. And this is literally just a spreadsheet of exactly what it sounds like. a grid of 1 million checkboxes that you can scroll through and click or even unclick to your heart's desire. And as you would imagine, people have sort of edged out little homes on there to create some artwork, and of course within a day or two there were bots and scripts that were auto clicking away, like some monstrous auto clicker game. Paperclip simulator, I think, is the one I'm thinking of, or cookie clicker would be the other one.
Farm something, that's one of them. Adventure Capitalist, is that another one? There's a bunch of them.
It's several, yeah. But there's something a little, that's the current sort of zeitgeist for something a little bit different out there. Just one other quick thing is you've been an advocate for cloud gaming on occasion, and I noticed that Microsoft announced they're adding Game Pass to Amazon Fire Stick. Product I'm not particularly familiar with, and I'm not particularly excited about supporting Amazon and Microsoft simultaneously to make a corpse for the price of one. But it's a discussion point more in the sense of this being a direction, Game Pass coming to more services that aren't locked to a console or even a PC. I think they were added to Samsung TVs last year, and now one more way of accessing Game Pass. And so platforms are moving from the confines of a physical console to software, basically, right? I mean, Game Pass is now a platform in of itself, accessible via multiple means. Fortnite, even, for example, is a platform now with multiple versions. So it's an interesting trend in video games right now, and how it does open things up, not without its problems, but I'm all for more ways of accessing Game Pass.
Right. Yeah, I think the smart TV makers, see what I did there, are really supporting cloud gaming in a strong way. For instance, I bought a new-ish TV recently from LG. I think they support Game Pass. I don't really care because my LG is connected to my Series X, so I don't get a benefit there. But it's got GeForce Now, it's got Boosteroid, it's got, I think, Amazon Luna, if that's still a thing. It has maybe 4 or 5 or maybe 6 cloud-based gaming platforms that it supports. And I know they're just apps. And I believe LG's web OS is just an Android fork or something like that. So it's not hard for these hardware manufacturers to create support for that. But I think it's great because, like you said, it points to a different direction. Maybe we're not going to have one box, but we're just going to go straight to the service providers. You could argue whether that's good. You know, maybe I don't need to give Rogers or Shaw, or in America, I don't know, Time Warner or something, tons of money when I could give it directly to the creative studio or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather Microsoft not be the only one doing this, because in that they have the monopoly on that kind of cloud gaming.
As long as there's multiple platforms out there, I'm all for it. And I haven't checked whether Sony PlayStation Cloud is supported by my TV, but that might be of interest to me.
I haven't seen much hustle around that. Like, even the whole PlayStation Now, I think, is the sort of Game Pass equivalent, is nowhere near the same scale or marketed in they don't have the same push by any means. It's mostly older games.
Yeah, which is really odd, because Sony, I believe, bought a really early cloud gaming company
PlayStation
years
TV
ago,
something, I think.
Yeah, they bought it years ago, way before Xbox Game Pass was a thing, just as a strategic investment. And they really just sat on it and didn't do anything. And I think PlayStation Now it's the only legacy of that business deal. And it's just sort of there, like a tepid, half-supported service. So it doesn't really excite me. But, you know, there are some PlayStation exclusives that I would consider subscribing a month or two to play.
Yeah, although PlayStation also coming to PC increasingly now.
True, very true.
Just got to wait a year or so. Anyway, shall we jump to some games?
Let's do it. Let's talk about games. Yeah. So you mentioned Steam Sale. Shall we compare notes and see?
Yeah, I did make a few impulse purchases there. Most importantly, the big game that everyone's been talking about for the last year and I've been putting off, but it's finally time to figure out what all the hubbub is about with Baldur's Gate 3. So I'm very early in that so far. I've just put an hour or two in, half of which was character creation. I know, I'm enjoying it so far. The character performances are all really strong, and the story has been really interesting so far. What I'm really struggling with is just the complete lack of any tutorialization. There are nominally tutorials, but it doesn't really give you any context. If you didn't know D&D already or have some framework, you wouldn't really have much those tutorials wouldn't explain anything. Like the first one is, oh, each round you have one action and one bonus action. But my character has like 10 actions, no context for any of those do, or what differentiates a bonus action. So it really does assume a lot of basic knowledge. Even the character creation didn't really explain anything in terms of what the different races and classes and skills, like attributes do. I can get by just from general mimetic knowledge of D&D language, right? But don't entirely know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think that was your complaint about the earlier Baldur's Gate games as well, right? Like you need to have pre-built in knowledge of the systems behind the game, the digital game.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, like Thaco was a big factor in Baldur's Gate 1 and why I bounced off of that. Yeah, but I mean, insofar as talking to characters and the sort of more story-based elements, it's all fairly intuitive. And the skill checks, it looks like occasionally it's some passive skill checks that will just happen to the side without actually rolling the dice, which is always fun. Like you never know what exactly is going to be a roll or not. Others, it'll actually give you the dice to click on and it'll show you exactly what your bonuses or negatives will be. And so that's a nice interface. The dice spins around spins around the screen with a lot of pizzazz, so that's always fun with the presentation of it. I still haven't dug much into the combat yet. I fell into a hole and was immediately surrounded by a large party of people, and no idea. Like I had no chance of doing that. So hope I saved within the last 10 minutes, right?
Yeah. Although you know everything you're describing sounds very familiar to what I'm playing with in terms of the Rogue Trader, the new-ish Rogue Trader CRPG game. Just you know, big complex productions of games that are built on tabletop RPG systems. Like unless you're playing an action RPG like a Diablo or a Borderlands, it's sort of hard to determine, you know, all the mathy percentage-based gobbledygook that's going on behind the scenes because you're not literally seeing like a poison orb go out and glom onto a creature when you pull the trigger or something like that. There's a disconnect, right?
And the game hasn't really even explained what those stats and like when you attack, what does it mean to like what the process of a roll entails and what kind of bonuses are being added to that, what the chances are of hitting that. That's not really explained by any means. So, yeah. Go in with an open mind and save often.
I would be really curious. I'm sure we won't have an answer for this immediately, but I would be very curious to hear what percentage of people Baldur's Gate 3 is their first RPG video game.
Yeah.
Probably a very small number.
Well, I would have to imagine, though, like this is a great opportunity for onboarding, right? And it's more of it's the shame that they're not taking that opportunity to bring more people in with that.
Yeah. Although I complained a lot about Elden Ring and other Souls-like RPGs being obtuse last episode, I think. So I could complain a while about opaque RPGs.
Oh, yeah, some people love the obscurity.
So I won't bore people with my complaints about that. I will share. I don't remember. I bought just like a handful of games on the game summer sale, mostly because they were like too cheap to resist. But one of them I was excited to play was called Deep Rock Galactiver.
This is the roguelike one?
It is the garlic-like. It is the Vampire Survivors like, but it more than that. It seems to be a little bit deeper. I'm really enjoying it. I actually played like 3 or 4 runs in a row when I first booted it up the other day. It follows along the tried and true formula, but it's just got a little bit more depth with, I guess, Vampire also has character classes, but there's just a little bit more crunch going on, and the action is very immediate. And I think it fits the theme, having played a little bit of the first person action game already. It fits the theme really well, and it's just really tense and fun. So I recommend what little I've played of Deep Rock Galactic Survivor so far.
Yeah, I played a little bit of the original Deep Rock Galactic, and it's obviously all about hordes of enemies swarming you. So it's a good fit for that. I know I have a friend who has the relatively new board game version that we're keen to try sometime soon. So yeah, another one with it's crossing multiple streams there. Yeah, I also bought a few smaller games that were like 90% off for a dollar just to get them off my wish list. Right. So the other big one that I haven't touched yet is Sekiro. Speaking of Souls-like games, it's the one sort of official From Souls game that I've not played, so I'll be getting to that sometime soon. But I didn't want to talk too much about video games. It's been a last episode was very heavy on that, and I have a few other things to discuss. So any other video games you want to talk about quickly?
Sure, I'll just blast through them since I didn't play them very much. But I started to play an older game called Trine, T-R-I-N-E, with my oldest kid. They like RPGs a lot. We've been looking for co-op RPGs to play. This is like a single screen, multiplayer, side scrolling. It's more like an action puzzle game with an RPG theming to it. Mm-hmm. And I think like we just really gelled with it. Like we instantly knew sort of what to do, what roles to take, how to solve the puzzles. We're discovering the class abilities. So I think that was a pretty good hit. And
that one functions like Lost Vikings, the classic game that I used to play on the Super Nintendo, in that you've got three characters that you're switching between. So you can play it solo and switch between those three characters, or you could have three different players playing one each. Yes, there's a whole series of those. I think there's four or five Trine games now.
I think there are four, at least four, to my knowledge. And I bought the Mega Pack, which was a while ago, before the summer sale. So I hadn't played much of any of them. So I'm excited to play with my oldest, and I think we will continue to enjoy that.
We'll keep busy for a while.
Yeah. And then most recently, speaking of older games, my kid and I have been getting into Halo multiplayer. So I don't know what started this, but we just like my kid's interested in first person shooters. They play a little bit like Fortnite. But, you know, like there's just only like so much interest in that. But I don't think they've really experienced kind of like arena style multiplayer, like, you know, old school multiplayer. Like
Quakes and TF2s, I guess.
Right. And Halo Infinite is surprisingly, I guess it shouldn't be surprising. It's very well structured for the most part. It's a solid, the action is solid. It's got a lot of options, a confusing amount of options sometimes. But we were able to figure it out so to play all the old game modes I loved from Halo 1, 2, and 3, and even some newer ones that we discovered, have quickly found some favorite map types. And we've been doing, because I don't want to play with randos and my oldest kid, essentially. Yeah. We've been playing multiplayer with bots. And it's actually been a heck of a lot of fun. I don't know, do you know the game mode Oddball?
So it's like King of the Hill kind of. Oh, no, it's like hot potato, right? You've got to hold the skull. Right.
While you hold the skull, you walk slowly, but you have I think you have an extra strong melee, but you can't shoot a gun. And of course, everyone's coming to get you. And of course, two-player Oddball is stupid because it's just keep away. But we threw in like one decent bot in there, and it really mixed it up. It like felt super dynamic because it's just enough spice to mix things up on a small map. Probably for the last couple of weeks, we've been playing Halo multiplayer like every other few days. And it's just been a blast. And I'm loving the retro styling of it. And I love that I get to share something I enjoyed in my young adulthood with my oldest kid, who's just kind of discovering this for the first time. So that was really nice.
Yeah, it's great to know that they've got some sort of offline multiplayer options there. I'd heard some buzz around the support of there was some various complaints about the support of that game going forward, and I'm curious what sort of community is still around Halo Infinite, if there's still if it's so easy to find multiplayer matches, I would assume there's still a community, but whether it's large enough or it's just the hardcore players left, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I imagine it's a lot of olds. I can't imagine that there's a lot of young people starting with Halo as their primary game or their
first game. Maybe everyone's reflexes are slow enough that you can keep up.
Yeah, it's just the right speed for me, and I'm getting some of these Halo skills back just because I know the feel of it. And funny enough, my kid today for their game time chose to play Halo Combat Evolved.
Ooh.
The remaster. And we were just having a blast because that remaster has that instant toggle between the old graphics and the remastered graphics. And the remaster looks rough enough compared to Infinite. And the OG looks, it was blowing my kid's mind how rough it looks.
Yeah, you see the new remaster, and it's like this is exactly what it looked like back in the day, right? Like this, they haven't changed much. And then you switch back, like
it really blows your mind. A bit of news: they're remastering Dead Rising original. Just released the trailer today.
I've not played any of that series. The time limits give me too much anxiety.
I love it. It's just such a great sandbox game, and the time limits give you just enough impetus to try different paths through the sort of the rat's maze, I guess. Anyways, that's an aside. Let's talk about other games. You said you wanted to talk about some more analog ones, right?
Yeah, it's been hard lately to keep that diet of gaming balanced, but I've been finding some ways to sort of portion out my different types of games to get some more variety in there and crossing the streams a little bit. Like I mentioned, Baldur's Gate, which is obviously based on a tabletop game. I've been playing another video game that's based on a board game, and another. I'll get to another one later, but for now, let's talk about Calico. So this is the abstract tile laying game from Flatout Games, designed by Kevin Russ. But recently, there was also a digital adaptation called Quilts and Cats of Calico, I think, in that order. Because there's a previous indie game that's just called Calico that was like a town, cozy town simulator game. So this is Quilts and Cats of Calico based on the board game Calico, right? So this is a game that I've mostly played solo, the board game at least. I dug that out recently. I remembered that at PAX last year, I picked up some of I think they're 3D printed buttons, because you're laying out hex tiles into a quilt pattern, and when you match certain colors you get buttons, and when you match certain patterns you get cats, as you do. And so I've got the physical the sort of plastic buttons now, which add some nice tactility. So I was revisiting that, and finally beat the solo mode that had been giving me so much trouble. That this is a notoriously difficult game. You're balancing a lot of objectives at once, like you're trying to match colors and patterns and match the three sort of scoring tiles in the middle of your quilts. So a lot to try and balance, and inevitably you hyperfixate on one and then realize you've just screwed yourself on the other one. So a lot to keep in mind compared to like Cascadia, which was a little more open-ended at least. Calico is like on a fixed board, so very tight. You can't go outside that board. Once the space is filled, that's it. So yeah, it's a favorite of mine. It's definitely you have to be in the mood for it. For that tight, it can be very punishing. So you have to be in the right mood for that. Make sure you've got some strong coffee to keep you awake there. But it is a favorite of mine. It's a great solo game. I enjoy the solo experience of they give you scenarios with clear win-loss conditions. It's not just get the highest score, right? It's like, well, use these conditions to start the game and try and fulfill these three objectives at the end to beat the condition, to beat the scenario. Interestingly, I've then played Quilts and Cats of Calico, the new digital implementation. I will say I did receive a review code for that version. So this has all the classic modes of Calico that you can play. Obviously solo, you can play online, you can play with bots. So you could play solo, but with actual simulated other players, if that's what you prefer, and just play a regular game, right? And compare yourself to the other bots. A cute touch is you have actual 3D cats wandering around the screen. And as you start fulfilling certain requirements, the cats will just literally walk across your keyboard. Sorry, walk across your screen and sit on your quilt. Sometimes they can be blocking things. You have to like click them to move them out of the way because you can't see the information underneath. But it's a really cute touch that you can create custom cats. I created the model of Ted, who is loitering around here somewhere. Will probably show himself at some point today. So that's another cute touch. So the scenarios that I mentioned, like there's the solo scenarios, there's like two or three times as many. Like there's a lot more scenarios if that's what interests you in the game. There's plenty more of those. Finally, there is a further mode. There is a story mode included with an actual narrative, which is a little strange. It's like some war-torn country sort of industrializing the production of quilts to send to war. It's a very not cozy theme, considering the quilts and the cats. It goes a little hard. I'm not sure why exactly, but it's basically just a framework to throw in some different different variations on the game. And they do shake that up quite a bit. And some of the early ones, at least, you might only need to place 10 tiles. So it's only a smaller section of the board. Just place 10 tiles, and there'll be a special rule, like you always have to place a color matching another color, which isn't normally a prerequisite. It's just you're always trying to do that anyway, but not, it's not a requirement. But now it might be a requirement. And I'm all for that in theory. I like mixing up that core mechanic and just shaking it up in small ways, right, to keep it interesting. The problem I found is that the tiles are predetermined. If you play those scenarios, you will draw the same tiles in the same order every time. And it's set up in such a way that if you just play it, so if you're just improvising the tiles, you might just fail based on the order that the tiles come out. And so the way to beat it is seemingly to memorize the order of those tiles to solve. It's like a puzzle that you're trying to solve by memorizing the order of the tiles. And that is like the least interesting way to play that game for me. Not all of them are like that, but there's been enough of them to really sort of not ruin, but just put a bit of a quilt over my enjoyment of that game.
Yeah. That's an interesting phenomenon related to digital versions of board games, is that of course board games don't come with AI, although in some cases they do if you want to include the automa modes that some games have. Solo games, they have a virtual opponent or they have a solo mode, like you mentioned. Some games are actually really good in solo, like Agricola is pretty good. I played a lot, and I used to play Terraforming Mars solo before the dedicated app came out.
Right.
But in the latter day digital conversions, I've kind of enjoyed some of the new scenarios that you've mentioned, plus playing against the bots. I generally just play against the bots now. But Dune Imperium has some good scenarios that are, I think, maybe the more style that I prefer, which is like it is a dynamic game every time the cards are shuffled newly every time you play them, but the game has just an extra condition, right? Has an extra condition on top of just the standard 10 points to win. So it says something like, you have to beat the game, but you can't have any of the cards you started in your deck or something like that. So just like an additional challenge like that, or you have to win with 15 points instead of 10 points. Or there's a whole raft of them. There's about a dozen or so, and some of them were quite devious, and I really enjoyed playing those, especially because, you know, some would argue that the base game of Dune Imperium is not that deep. I've still been enjoying it though with some of the harder AI. And then another digital version of a board game I enjoy is Through the Ages. Through the Ages has an excellent digital implementation. It works great on a tablet, even works okay on a phone, even on that small of a screen. But it also comes with some of those funky, like different rule scenarios. And some of them are actually incredibly easy. And then some of them are also deviously hard. But I like how they just like flip the rules on you, which is something a board game does not easily do. Sometimes it's harder to implement those variants, but obviously a digital version, it's just a click of a button.
Yeah, these are the sort of things that would be house ruled, or you'll see a variant thread on Board Game Geek. And so making those official, a lot of them aren't necessarily always balanced, but would lean into a particular part of the game that someone might like more than another, or downplay the aggression element of a game, for example. So yeah, there's no harm in having those extra options there, especially in a digital app. Through the Ages is probably best in class for me as far as digital apps go. A lot of great options there. Unfortunately, it's been just broken for me. Every time I've started the game, within a few rounds, everyone's like, one player will drop out. It will just like disconnect them, and then gradually everyone will drop out at one at a time. So I'm not sure what's happening there. It's just
so you're talking about online multiplayer.
Yes. I guess I could humans. Probably still play on bots in person, or like solo through the ages. But yeah, by most accounts, I'm the only person with this problem. It's still a great app out there. So as far as Dune Imperium, and the quick news that I forgot to mention, that they just announced the Rise of Ix expansion is coming to that digital implementation.
That's great to hear. I've played Dune Imperium, the app, the digital app, probably to death. I've literally beaten all of those scenarios that I told you about. I'm still playing the base game. I still enjoy it, but I'm not playing it nearly as much as I do some of the other apps on my almost daily routine. So I would love to see some more blood injected there. And Ix adds some, it kind of makes some fixes, right? Kind of makes it some fixes for some of the actions that are less interesting, less universally relevant through the course of the game. So I'm looking forward to that.
It adds those, I can't remember what they're called, the tiles that basically let you customize a little engine builder. Like, it gives you tiles with unique abilities that they can change up game to game. So yeah, it must be hard going, like, once you've played the board game with the expansions, especially the new Uprising, it must be hard going back to just the original base game without all of those extra options there. So it's a little bit like sort of WoW class, World of Warcraft classic, right? Returning to the bare bones. I mean, there's obviously a charm to that. So
yeah, I had only played Ix in, I think I played it first after I got the digital implementation of the game, so I didn't feel like I was really missing much. I wasn't stepping back. Ix was just kind of like a preview of what's to come in the digital format.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, if you mean to try that digital version, apparently it's very good.
It's really solid, yeah.
And probably on sale on the Steam sale right now, so.
Quite possibly. And I'm going to look out for the DLC, because I would like to get that at the earliest opportunity. I'm usually not a DLC bandwagon jumper, but I figure for board games that I really play often, it's worth it. And digital implementations of board games I do play a lot, right?
I don't play that many digital implementations, to be honest. I'd rather play the physical game, or if I'm at the computer, I'd rather play a video game, right? Most of those fill this really awkward spot. I mean, during the pandemic, for example, they could fill that gap there, but otherwise, I'd always prefer the physical thing. Or playing asynchronously on Board Game Arena is the my one. I get a little bit of a fix there on occasion. Some games I think are better on Board Game Arena.
Yeah,
Seven Wonders Duel is one game I think has additional layers in how you can calculate the information so much more easily and not have to lay out those fiddly, really thin cards.
Calculation is a huge advantage of digital apps. Versions BGA or dedicated, as is setup. Like, you and I played our feature game of next episode, Feast for Odin, on the weekend, and I won't say much about it except to say that calculation is a big time consumption at the end of the game, and then setup is a big time consumption at the beginning of the game, and you have none of that in the digital version. So in that sense, you have some great advantages on the digital side.
Yeah, but the presentation, I think, leaves a lot to be desired for that one in particular. More on that next episode, perhaps.
True. So for me, I guess dedicated digital apps implementations of board games are not the primary activity I'm doing when I'm doing them. It's a second screen activity.
Right. Yeah.
So for me, I guess that's why I enjoy the ones that don't take my full brain power, because it's sort of like I will take a move while I'm trying to figure out like a work problem, because yes, I am playing these during work. I'm sorry. So it's like my Microsoft Solitaire, I guess.
Well, yeah, I don't have that luxury, unfortunately, but that is podcast for me, basically. So
there you go.
Yeah. Hopefully it is for you too, listener.
That's right. You can always count on Omni Gamers Club podcast. All right. Any other games you would like to talk about?
Yeah. This I mentioned last episode that I'd been talking about. I'd been exploring the solo journaling game, The Portal at Hill House. So I've still not completely dived into that yet. This is a game that someone could sit down, read the rules of, and play a full round of in one sitting. This is my first one of these, so I'm really leaning into the ritual of it, shall we say, and I'm sketching out some ideas and sketching out some of the images of how I picture this to go, and taking notes and things to prepare myself and embrace this, making it last a little bit. But the key thing is, so in this game, I think I mentioned last week, you're exploring the eponymous house that's, you're looking for some MacGuffins to close the portal, right? You design the house yourself, and it can look like anything you want it to be. There is some sort of subtext that maybe like the game does have these sort of subconscious themes of horror and sort of liminal spaces, impossible geometry. At least I'm reading that into it. But you could easily play the game without all of that. But that's part of the appeal for me, is leading into those horror elements of the layout of this house. So as a bit of an experiment, another example of sort of cross-platform games here, I've been playing the board game Floor Plan and importing that into the Portal at Hill House. So Floor Plan is a roll-and-write game from Friendly Skeleton, I think. The publisher changed their name, I think. So this is the roll-and-write variety of the spreadsheet. There's the grid of squares that you're filling in some design. Like, you've got Cartographers, which is a map. Or is it Welcome to Dino Land, I think, that has the designing a Jurassic Park theme park, basically. They all just feel incredibly obvious. Like, if you're going to have a grid of squares and make a game around designing something, like, the three things you would think of, like map, dinosaur park, and floor plan of a house, they're just all incredibly obvious and it's intuitive. Not to say that this game designs itself, but there's something very primal and immediate about, like, it just makes sense. You've got two dice, you roll the two d6s, it's a three and a four, you draw a room of 3x4 squares. And like, a three might be a kitchen and a four is a living room, I think, and you have to, so it has to be one of those two types of room. You label it accordingly. So there's also, you could also, instead of drawing a room, you can draw features. Like, a three might be windows, I think, and a four is like deck spaces that you can draw outside the house. So you can either draw a room or you can draw some features based on those numbers, right? That's all something very immediate and satisfying about just designing this house. That where I think the game is let down a little bit is in the scoring mechanism. That's, it's all a little bit by the books in terms of, you draw out these, you've got various cards that you shuffle, and it's going to be a random scoring objective, like one of like five scoring objectives. Sorry, there'll be five random scoring objectives, right? There might be, oh, you need a living room with five adjoining other rooms. Or you need a closet that's surrounded by deck spaces. It's a shed. The way the scoring is, though, it's just you pick those, of those five scoring objectives, you have to try and get six of them, mixing and matching. And first person to get six of them will trigger the end game. So it's very simple, not a particularly inventive scoring technique. It's largely going to involve you picking one or two of those and doubling down on just hyperfixating on that one thing as much as possible. Obviously, the dice is going to be largely very determined on that. It can feel a little like you don't have a lot of opportunities for expression, I feel. It's going to be a little bit emergent from those dice. And I only played it solo, but it does seem a little bit of an issue that if you're playing with other people, a lot of the houses will end up looking fairly similar because you're all drawing from the same dice. But like, there's just something still incredibly satisfying about drawing your house and have it, and it looks really good. I should have brought my spreadsheet drawing a floor plan of a house. And it's just incredibly intuitive and it's a fun little roll and write. So I'm pretty sure there's a spin-off game called Winchester House, but based on the historical Winchester House, it really leans into, again, those more horror liminal space elements. Because as if you're designing a house by rolling the dice, you might just end up with all living rooms and no bathrooms. So you're inevitably going to end up with a house that doesn't make sense, even in this base game, which I think is part of the charm. You're not designing the perfect house. You're designing like these wacky. Some engineer has gotten incredibly drunk and forgot to put the kitchen in there. So that's another fun element, and just leaning into the wackiness of it. And so I've been using that, leaning into that element of it, seeing what house I come up with, and then importing that into Portal at Hill House to see what kind of weird horrific spaces I come up with to explore. So still working on that, but I haven't started Portal at Hill House properly yet, but I'm working through some several games of floor plan to sort of as part of the preparation.
Very nice. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but every verbal description of a roll and write game I've ever heard sounds like a super snooze, and floor plan does as well. But I know that some of them can be fun. Speaking of Board Game Arena, I believe Cartographers was recently added there, which is one of my favorite, one of my actually only few roll and write games that I like. A lot of roll and write games I've not enjoyed, but that doesn't mean they're all bad. Maybe I just don't get them or they don't suit me well, but I hear what you're saying. You're just kind of like you're literally rolling with the dice or the flip of the cards.
There's something very meditative about it though. And I said, just not trying to make a perfect house. You're just, like I said, letting the emergent house form itself, basically, right? As a meditative experience. And I think this game could have been a lot better if they just tweaked the scoring a little bit, made it a little more interesting. Like Cartographers has those sort of staggered scoring conditions that switch out each round, right? So it's in a little more bit more of a kick, but like core mechanic is just, like I said, very primal and just. It's in all of us to just want to draw the floor plan of a house.
Cartographers has those scoring conditions laid out from the start. The card flips are the kind of the chaos, right? They're the chaos that sort of derails all of your good, well-intentioned plans that you have from the outset of laying out your map. Yeah, so that part I like. Although I haven't played the digital implementation on BGA just yet.
I have once, and it's good for roll and writes especially. Like you want to break out the colored pencils, right? That's like, for me, that's the point. Steal my daughter's crayons and go to town.
Yeah, although I think there was an implementation on a different digital platform. Maybe it was Tabletop Simulator or something like that. But they were using something like it was almost like bath tiles. Like making a mosaic, so like
stickers or something.
When you needed to make a T shape or something like that, you put four squares down, and of course they were all the right colors. And there was something there was something nice and meditative about it, because it was like you were literally making a mosaic.
As long as it was somewhat automatic and you weren't just like slowly dragging one tile at a time.
You were dragging one tile at a time, but it was easy.
Boy,
no, I liked it. I liked it. It was fun.
I guess it's
Actually, maybe it's the digital app. Maybe there is a dedicated digital app for that.
Possibly.
I'm losing my memory there. All right, I'm just going to blast through a little bit of what I've been doing on the tabletop gaming side. I've been doing mostly reading. I've been reading up on some old adventures for Earthdawn, which I've spoken about in the past. It's an old school system that I grew up with from the 90s. It's fantasy with a little bit of Cthulhu Cthulhu meets Fallout twist to it, which I like quite a bit. It's a very unique world. I've been reading up about Espergenesis, which I don't know if it started off as a 5e based game, but it's basically 5e space.
Oh, okay.
And there are a few other, you know, 5e space games like out there, 5e type space systems out there, not the least of which is, I guess, Starfinder is like 3.5, 3.75, I guess, at this point now, since it's Starfinder 2. But I haven't played any of these. Espergenesis, it looks pretty like stereotypical, like Star Wars with the serial numbers filed off kind of thing. But I don't know. I just want to break out of doing something other than traditional D&D with my traditional D&D playing group. So that's just an idea I have.
You've got to ease them in, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm considering one or either of those. I also mentioned City of Mist in past episodes, considering that. And the new thing that I tried out this past weekend, because it was a long weekend, something I've never tried before, is resin crafting. Have you ever given your hand at resin crafting before?
A little bit. I made a custom start player marker for Cryptid Cafe, I think it was. It was like a salt shaker that I filled with resin to like simulate slime.
Interesting. Yeah, I just saw, like, obviously there's YouTube videos and TikToks and things like that. You could watch them forever. But just the thought of making my own little bits is what drew me into it originally for board games. This was when I was prototyping a whole lot more. But then I got into RPGs, and wouldn't you know it, they have polyhedral dice molds, which I bought a couple. And I tried it out. Here's my first creation. I don't know if you can see it right now, but it's a
D8. I can tell that it's pink.
With a giant, here, it's not in focus, but you can see can you see the giant chip off the edge?
No, it's a bit fuzzy there, sorry.
Basically, massive Swiss cheese size holes in my final product marred the effect. So they didn't come out perfectly, but I think that's just a lesson learned. Next time, I'm going to be a lot more gentle when I'm stirring the two parts of the epoxy together.
Yeah, the one thing I learned about resin, it's impossible to keep bubbles out of it.
Yeah,
there must be an art to it, but I haven't figured it out.
Basically, in the molds, they either had 7 or 9, depending on the shapes that I did. And this one, I don't know if you can see that either. You can see that number 4?
Yes.
This is a alternative D4 shape, and it came out pretty well.
Yes.
So some of them, it's some like portion of them, came out okay. So I am pleased that it can be done. It can be done. And I, of course, happen to have some nice paints. So I filled in a little bit of gold on this one for my model painting. So basically, I'm just kind of enjoying learning and building things hands on. And I think it's nice.
Yeah. Well, there's our craft corner. I think there's actually a Kickstarter I saw that's for a series of dice molds, both for like craft purposes, but also like cookie purposes. There's both edible and other craft versions of these molds. So I'll find the name of that and put it in the show notes.
Very nice. All right. What do you think? Does that feel like a good balanced diet of games that we played there?
Yeah, that'll keep us going for a week at least. Let's bring this home. So once again, I think we'll have one more playlist next week before we can bring you our featured game, that is A Feast for Odin. But we do have an exciting guest for that, so stay tuned and send in any questions you might have, or comments or reviews, or on this episode or the next, to not A Feast for Odin, to omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at our website, omnigamers.club.
Yeah, would love to hear your feedback. Tell us what digital gaming board game digital versions you're playing, what games you like to play on Board Game Arena, and maybe some games that you've given up on those platforms because they just don't do it for you anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think I'm forgetting something, but yes. So you can find me at A Board Game Feast. I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky.
Yeah, you can find me at Omnigamer Mark on Facebook and Blue Sky.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, and have a balanced diet of games. Don't spend too much on that Steam sale. Bye. Thanks for listening. Bye.